Caitlin, do you think you have a friendship love language?
I'm basically happy if my friends laugh at my jokes. You didn't laugh very hard.
So that's basically like words of affirmation?
Laughter of affirmation. But words of affirmation is the closest love language. What do you think yours is?
Quality time. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's really hard to come by these days as adults with your friends.
Yeah, even just trying to get people together here in New York feels like a Herculean task.
This is the secret reason I really wanted to do a podcast with you. Like a built-in weekly date.
Our therapist, I mean our producer, is very proud of the progress we've made. From Religion News Service, this is Saved by the City, a podcast from two Christian women making friends and probably some frenemies in New York. I'm Caitlin Beatty.
And I'm Roxy Stone.
I'm Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch. This week on The State of Belief, Jim Wallis, founder of Sojourners and author of the new book, The False White Gospel, Rejecting Christian Nationalism, Reclaiming True Faith, and Refounding Democracy.
It's a culmination, summation of the work that a lot of us have done for an awful long time. I think the time has come for a serious test of faith.
The State of Belief, where religion and democracy meet. Distributed by Religion News Service Podcasts and available on your favorite podcast app. I'm Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch. The State of Belief is a weekly podcast with a potent mix of spiritual wisdom, political strategy, and hopeful commentary. In a series of inspiring conversations, celebrating our diversity, and bringing us together to, in the words of the great James Baldwin, achieve our country. The State of Belief, where religion and democracy meet. Distributed by Religion News Service Podcasts and available on your favorite podcast app.
Earlier this week, I was at an event and I met these two women, and both of them in separate instances and together multiple times referred to each other as my best friend. And it was really cute. And also, I was just struck by it because how often do adults do that, you know?
It feels like something like when you're nine, you decide we're each other's best friends. You don't hear adults using that language very much.
Right. You know, you give each other friendship bracelets. And I didn't see if they had made each other friendship bracelets, but
maybe friendship tattoos.
Ooh. But at one point I asked them, I was like, how did you two become best friends?
Yeah. You asked for their meet cute.
Yeah, I did. And it was fun because it actually was kind of like a rom-com. Like one of them was like, oh, you go first. You go first. And then they were like, well, I hated her the first time I met her. And then they like, kept running into each other and being in the same circles. And then at some point had to do a long walk in the rain together for whatever reason. And two decades later, here they are, besties.
What is our friendship love story?
Our meet cute.
Well, okay. My first vivid memory of our friendship is when we were working on the This Is Our City project, which we've mentioned before. We were in San Francisco. You and I had been staying in hotel rooms before that, but like, I could not crack the Roxy code. I was like, she's very quiet. Is she mad? Maybe she's really tired. And then we got together with Holly, and you and Holly like knew each other. Like Holly was a mutual friend of ours, and you shared very personally about the unraveling of your marriage.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, okay. You never know what's going on beneath the surface. And Roxy just shared something incredibly vulnerable with you. Just because someone is stunning and gorgeous doesn't mean their life is also perfect.
Oh, well, thank you.
So that like shifted something for me.
Yeah, I remember that. It's so funny when people reflect back to you how you are, because I get that a lot, like, oh, you were so quiet, I didn't know if you liked me or if you were mad at me. And I'm like, I really need to work on that, because I think in my own mind there's like insecurities, like I feel shy or I feel like you know, it takes me a little bit to feel confident enough around somebody. And then I think it comes across as like the opposite. So
yeah.
Anyway, life lessons, continuing to learn.
It got better from there.
It did.
Less intense and less like emotionally churning.
Yeah. We also had fun. We also like went to Disney World together.
We had a very faded Orlando trip with Holly. Mm-hmm. I came to visit you in New York, or I came to visit New York and I stayed with you.
Yeah.
And we went out with Jonathan Merritt.
Yeah.
And I was struggling the next day. I don't know if you remember that.
I do a little bit. Yeah.
But that was your first apartment in the East Village.
Oh, I love that place.
I loved the apartment. I was like, Caitlin, like Roxy has, she's done the New York thing. Like you could do it too.
I have a memory of talking to you when you were starting to like really plan on moving here.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about what it would take financially. I remember you were like, okay, I have some frank questions to ask.
Yeah. Yep.
So my earliest memories of you, I remember being at CT before This Is Our City, when we both just overlapped working there for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was intimidated by you. I was like, she's tall and she's smart.
Tall. Wow. This is words of affirmation.
Right.
Thank you. It's just so funny how perception works.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't interact a lot, but we had some mutual friends. I think we both helped the same people move out of their apartment.
Yeah.
I do remember you said, I like your Merrell boots. Oh. And I was like, oh, okay. This woman has good taste if she knows about Merrell.
Oh, man. Back in the day. Yeah. But This Is Our City when we were traveling together. We just covered a lot of literal ground together and
yes,
like sleeping together in hotel rooms and getting ready in the bathrooms in the morning. That'll do it.
Uh-huh. Pre-coffee.
Yeah.
That's the real stuff.
I was thinking about this too, like in terms of like this meet cute. We so often think of that as like a romance, but obviously like friendships have origin stories too.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking about how like on screen, friendships are portrayed and like romance stories are portrayed. It's like so many movies, you know, you've got like the rom-com genre, like the whole plot line, the point of it is the falling in love. And then it just ends, you know? And then I was thinking about the most like famous friendship stories on screen. And it kind of struck me that like all the ones I could think of were TV series, not a movie. Like they're not like the main plot line, but instead they're just like this long ongoing storyline. They're people's life stories in TV shows, but they're like portrayed as being alongside friends, you know?
Yeah. One of my mentors in college said something my freshman year that at the time I was like, that's so weird. And now I think is true. He said something like, in the next 4 years, you will fall in love with your friends. What he meant was the process of becoming friends that stick around for life, like those early days, you are actually falling in love with them. You are actually creating bonds that are forged by you, like seeing your friends for the amazing people that they are in the way that we also have when we are falling in love with a romantic partner. That makes so much more sense to me now than it did 20 years ago, because friendship has been so significant in my adult life in a way that romantic love has felt like a give and take and a big emotional risk and swing that sometimes doesn't always work out.
Yeah. And then your friends are there. There's an expected trajectory for a romance that's like, if it works, you end up at an altar and then you're married. And like often that's when the rom-com ends, you know, because like that's the culmination of the love story in so many people's minds. Although obviously there are other things that are expected, like maybe you have kids or you make a family or those kinds of things. Whereas like friendships don't have that given trajectory where it's like, oh, your friendship was successful because you what, you know, like it just keeps going or it doesn't, but
we obviously have very clear tried and true rituals for sealing the deal on a romantic relationship. We don't currently have that in kind of a culturally normative way. I'm sure that there are specific friends who are like, every year we go vacation together, or we do have friendship tattoo. Like, I know that there are friends who try to like ritualize their friendship, but friendship kind of feels like something that is good as long as it works out.
That's true.
But if life takes you elsewhere, it can be one of the first things that falls away.
Yeah, that definitely feels like it's part of the cultural idea around friendship, at least right now. Maybe because friendship is so often thought of as sort of fun. Like, oh, I go hang out with my friends. When life gets busy, that can be an easier thing to let go of or to sort of deprioritize in a way that you're, you know, you're not going to deprioritize like spouse or your kids or your mom and dad or something.
Yeah. But I kind of want to say why.
Me too. Me
Which
too.
Which is the point of this episode. Like, why is it that on the list of relationship priorities, friends come maybe third or fourth? And even then, like, they're competing for a seat at the table alongside a spouse and like biological family.
That are always sort of seen as like the main relationship you have to take care of the most.
We've probably both experienced what it feels like to have a friend get married and realize, oh, I don't hear from them anymore.
Yeah, I had just got demoted.
Yeah.
Replaced.
Of course, it's probably unintentional or it's not meant to be hurtful, but it still doesn't feel great.
One of the things our guest today is adamant about is that her husband is not her best friend. She said she actually started her marriage thinking that he was supposed to be, because that's like this ideal that's thrown around.
It's not a diminishment of my husband or of our relationship. He's my husband. He's the most important person in my life. He's not my best friend in that I have other best friends. He doesn't want to hang out with me the same way that my best friends want to hang out with me.
Laura Tremaine is author of the book, The Life Council, 10 Friends Every Woman Needs. She's an avid proponent of the importance of friendship in a world obsessed with romance.
Our interview with Laura is coming up later in the show. But first,
the top 10 friendship lessons we learned from TV.
Specifically TV shows about New York City and friendship.
Which there are a fair number of.
I'm going to name 5 TV shows. We'll name our top takeaway.
I assume we'll start with a show called Friends. Just a little kind of like sleeper hit from the 90s.
That's about friends.
Yeah. Yeah, seems like the right place to start.
All right. So besides learning unhealthy ideas about body image.
yeah. Also, man, that show is packed with a lot of homophobia. It does not hold up in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Besides that, what is your top friendship lesson that you took away from Friends?
Besides, try to inherit your grandmother's rent-stabilized apartment that is 3,000 feet.
So good. Such a good apartment.
Live close to your friends.
That's mine too. Proximity. That is what I learned about from that show, is like, especially in New York City, you need to be able to walk to your friends.
Yes.
If you really want to spend that kind of time together, which is part of what it is to build a friendship.
Ross lived across the street and could see into their apartment. It's great when that works out.
And it strikes me that the show didn't have to do that, you know, because like, time and space doesn't exactly exist on TV shows. So people could have just like shown up and we didn't have to watch their subway ride and watch the long walk in the rain or whatever. But the show actually was like, no, they have to live next to each other. That's part of it.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have another takeaway from Friends?
Find a third space that's fun to hang out at.
Oh, yeah. Good. Actually, that's kind of true for our next one.
Which is?
Seinfeld. They have that cafe or the diner that they always meet at.
Yeah, the diner, which is an actual diner on the Upper West Side. gosh, what's the lesson you took from Seinfeld?
I think that the lesson from Seinfeld for me is to laugh together. Like, have a good sense of humor with your friends.
Mm-hmm. My lesson from Seinfeld is similar, which is find friends who can embrace you at your most awful. I mean, yeah. These are all like sometimes borderline sociopathic people.
Truly, truly. How about How I Met Your Mother?
Yes. Him, yep. I don't know it super well, but I do know that in the core friend group, there's a couple and single people, and they all kind of hang out together. And I feel like it's not like, oh, the couples go in the couple world now and the single people go in the single world now. Like, you know, we need each other.
That's true. That's actually not something that has happened on the other shows we've talked about. At least it did in Friends, but not till later, like way later.
Right.
This is not only How I Met Your Mother, but this would have maybe been true with some of the others too. But I think in How I Met Your Mother, because like the whole point of it, right, is like all of these women that he meets that you think, is that the one?
Right.
And so I think my friendship lesson from that one is like that you have to let your friends make a bunch of bad decisions and put up with their own life choices, you know, and like be there. Like maybe they're going to bring home some people that you're like, that's not the right person.
I feel like we're missing one of the OGs.
Sex in the City, you mean?
Yes. I feel like it is the quintessential show about female friendship in New York. Man. Well, the lesson that we just talked about definitely, yeah,
that definitely
is
applies.
Gleaned.
There was a lot of bad. A lot of bad dating decisions on that show.
But I would say the friends in Sex and the City do a really good job of a balance between, okay, you're making your own life choices. I'm not going to try to control you or intervene, except that there are these key moments in their friendships where they do intervene or like have a hard conversation. And it feels like it really comes from a place of love. Like, I care about you. I want the best for you. I don't think this is going to go well for you. I think that's like pretty rare to see.
Yeah.
Like friends who are able to have hard conversations that feel weighty.
I think the show does a really good job of following the characters through evolution and the friendships shift and change alongside that. So a lot of the other shows I feel like we're talking about, like we're almost like stuck.
Yes.
Over 6 years, nobody changed very much, you know, or however long they were.
Yes. For all that we could critique about Sex and the City, I think in so many ways, it's a great representation of friendship.
What about Girls? A sort of homage to Sex and the City.
But a cringy, gritty, very, it's like peak millennial. I mean, it came out over a decade ago, and I've gone back and watched episodes, and I'm like, it's really good at capturing a very specific moment culturally for like millennials in their 20s. Gosh, they're all kind of awful to me.
I was going to say, did we learn any good lessons from that show?
The show kind of ends with all of them deciding like the time of our friendship is over. We all moved to the city together. We've all kind of gone our separate ways. Let's just call it. Maybe we're not going to be in each other's lives forever. And I feel like there is something refreshing in just maybe acknowledging that there are specific kinds of friendships that are for a season. And that's okay. Like, not every friend is going to be a lifer.
Right.
I was recently reading this interview with an author named Raina Cohen, who just published a book called The Other Significant Others, which is about friendship.
Yeah.
And it just struck at such a nerve for me, in part because she puts friendship in a historical context. Like, for most of human history, friendship was considered kind of the highest bond.
Yeah.
Because your spouse, marriage wasn't weighted with all of this emotional and romantic expectation. Like, friends would be buried next to each other instead of spouses. I think today we would be like, that's kind of weird. You know, Raina talks about going to weddings where the newlyweds refer to each other as like you're my best friend. Mm-hmm. The best man and the maid of honor are standing right there.
Right.
She said, it feels like I just watched them get publicly demoted. Mm-hmm. Like, and maybe that is okay in some ways, but we have so many expectations that romantic love also be the place where we find like our deepest, most lasting bonds. And does that end up, you know, deprioritizing friendship? Raina and her partner live in an intentional community. So she's very much trying to build a life that reflects this commitment to friendship. And, you know, you and I know lots of Christians who have done like the intentional Christian community thing.
Yeah.
Like on paper, I'm like, yes, we need more of this. This is absolutely how we are meant to live. We do life together, as it were. And then I'm like, no, I can't.
Really?
What if one of the people in my intentional community is like a trombone player?
Oh, man.
And is practicing at all hours of the day? Or like, I mean, or what if one of them is really messy and never cleans up after themselves? That's the more realistic possibility.
Yeah. I also, on paper, really love this and yet have lived alone for all of my single adult life. Like, I didn't do that. And there's a part of me that really regrets that. And a part of me that, like, looking ahead at getting married, thinking, like, what would it look like to not just set up nuclear family life like it's always expected to look in America.
Right.
And I find a lot of what Raina writes about really compelling. Like, she has all these stories of these very unconventional setups where friends have really chosen to prioritize each other. I find that really beautiful. And I think what I don't know is how to actually do that. Like, how do I get all of my friends to even imagine living in one place? You know, like, they're spread out all over the country, even in New York. They're all in Brooklyn.
Right.
What are you guys doing in Brooklyn?
Yeah, like, oh, my friends live a 30-minute train ride away, but like, gosh, I don't see them that much because it's a 30-minute train ride. Like, if that is enough of a barrier, how much more would it be a steep ask to be like, so do you guys want to like share utilities and a grocery list and maybe even co-own a property together?
That's what I really want. I want us all to buy a brownstone in Brooklyn somewhere. We can each have a floor.
Well, that would be the ideal.
Right. Because then you can have your own space, but you can so easily just like knock, knock, knock.
Yes. We're basically back to the show Friends.
We are. Yeah. Yeah. But what I like about this is like only one person has to have a crock pot.
Yes. There's an economy to the setup.
But yeah, I mean, it's really hard to make the choice to do this. And I don't know, maybe it's unrealistic and maybe there's other models of what it means to be intentional about prioritizing friendship than just living together.
I know our guest today has a lot of thoughts about making and keeping friendships. But first, we need to give a shout out to our sponsor friend, Religion News Service.
Religion News Service is an independent, award-winning source of global reporting on religion, spirituality, culture, and ethics.
From the NUNS nuns to the NONES nuns, RNS covers religion like none other.
Our listeners should know that Saved by the City has some podcast friends. Religion News Service now has a podcast network. It includes Martini Judaism with Rabbi Jeffrey Salkin and The State of Belief with Reverend Paul Brandeis Rauschenbusch. So give them a listen.
We'd also love to hear your own ideas for future guests and topics for SBTC. Drop us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts or shoot us an email at sbtcpodcast@religionnews.com. We want to hear from you. Hey there, curious minds.
Get ready to embark on a unique journey at the crossroads of money and religion with our new podcast, Money Meet Meaning.
The seductive effect of money, we think it can do the work that God does because there's something about money that does that. It's wild.
I'm Amber Hacker.
And I'm Tom Levinson.
Tune in for a blend of wisdom and levity as we decode the path to a more meaningful relationship with money.
I think giving, and this is a little crass, but I feel like it's the ultimate middle finger to money. It's liberating. to give some away.
This podcast is your gateway to a vibrant and thought-provoking exploration of the interconnectedness of wealth and spirituality.
Join us as we unravel the surprising influence of ancient wisdom on modern finances.
Faith pervades people's lives and our society. And because money is such an important part of people's lives, exploring that intersection of faith and money, I think, is super, super interesting.
Get ready to be informed, entertained, and inspired to transform your financial outlook with Money Meet Meaning. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's guest is a friend I met over a decade ago on the other side of the world, where we shared a lot of very long bus rides and a lot of very deep conversations.
Laura Tremaine is author of the book Life Counsel, 10 Friends Every Woman Needs, and she hosts the podcast 10 Things to Tell You. We're delighted to have Laura back on the show.
Hi, Laura.
Hey, Laura. Good to see you.
I am glad to be back chatting with y'all because we are friends.
And we don't always get to chat. Well, you have sort of made friendship your main thing. You know, your first book touched on it a lot. Your podcast touches on it all the time. And your newest book, The Life Counsel, really focuses on it. So tell us a little bit about why the topic of friendship has held such an urgency for you and you've wanted to like really spread a message about it.
When I very first started creating online on a blog, back in the blogging days, was writing from a place of loneliness at that time. So this was probably 15 years ago. And I lived in Los Angeles, the city of millions of people. And I was as lonely as I had ever been in my life. Mm. And that was a thing that I wrote about back then. And it got a lot of response. It wasn't the main thrust of my blog or anything, but it did come up all the time that I was making some friends on the internet. And that was frustrating to me that I could not seem to make local friends in LA. What? How is that possible? And so people really responded to that theme. It ended up feeling really obvious to me that friendship is served up to us when we're young. You know, when we're in school, we're with our classmates 8 hours a day, every day, or we're on a sports team or we're in choir. So it was easy to make friends because they're literally proximity becomes friendship.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I know we all kind of go from childhood to adulthood thinking it will still be like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be the same. And I wrote about this on and off for years. I was like a real champion of making online friendships and why those are real friendships. I wrote about that for a while. I wrote about how it was hard to find mom friends, which everyone told me when I had kids, the mom friends would just appear. I had just taken on this topic from a lot of different angles. And finally, I felt like after, you know, just exploring it from a lot of different ways over the years, that I wanted to write a book that sort of explained the conclusion I had finally come to. I have figured out a way for me, at least, to think about it. And it was this life council concept, which is if you're looking like a board of directors that you would have for a company, you know, if you have a board of directors, you probably have someone who's really good at the financial part. You probably have someone who's creative, an HR person, an older person, a younger person, like you would stack a board of directors for a successful company, ideally with people who have different strengths. That is the same idea of the life council. You were to sit like, you know, knights of armor around a table, like you would want your people to be very different in speaking into your life, which isn't to say we don't all have spaces in our friendships where there's a lot of sameness. We do. I've been a part of a lot of groups of people where there's a lot of sameness, and that's maybe the connecting tissue. But as we get older and as we're trying to sort of figure it out, like you might have one friend who you can go deep with really quickly, and you might have one friend who's like sort of on the shallow side, and that's not bad. Like she's fun.
I had someone pop into my mind.
Yeah.
Of course you did. We all do. And you might be sometimes tempted to think like, well, I mean, like we're friends, but she's not like a friend.
Right.
That's interesting.
You might think that. Fun friends are an important part of the life council. I like to have friends that I'm not going to pour my heart out to.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
One thing that I really appreciate the concept is that, see, I don't know if this is unique to women. I have definitely experienced it in all of my friendships with women, is that there's a tendency to kind of rank who's my best friend,
And how do you know? And can you have more than one best friend? And then over time, it's like, well, I have my core group, and then I have this broader circle. And there's something about us wanting to rank friendships in terms of value. And what the Life Council is offering is like all of the levels of friendship have value on the council. I assume that you have an actual life council. Do these women know that they're on your life council? And if so, like, do they know each other? Like, do you get the council together?
Okay, well, they know now because I wrote a book about them. Right.
Yeah. And you named them.
Yes, I give them a name. Like, the life council, the subtitle to the book is 10 Friends Every Woman Needs. I write mm-hmm. about these 10 different types of friends. And then I write about who that is on my life council or who it has been mm-hmm. in the past, because even though Michael W. Smith told us that friends are friends forever, 'tis not always true.
Right.
Darn you, Michael.
The expectation.
That is a false narrative is what he did. Okay.
Set us all up for failure.
He really did. Mm-hmm. But they don't all know each other. And no, I haven't exactly gathered them. And I don't think, not that you asked, but it's not really necessary.
Right.
Yes. My question was taking the council idea very literally. Like, yeah. Surely you have board meetings and you're like, yeah. No, this is just a concept.
But it's not all like, you know, although we were all the CEOs of our own life, it's not all about us, right? Because as you're reading the book, I hope that you're also thinking, who am I to other right. people? What role am I playing? You know, I might be a business bestie to one person and a password protector to someone else. Your battle buddy might not occupy any other seats, because what is primary about that connection is that you are, have gone through a battle together or mm-hmm. are walking through a battle together. It's not just like, who can I stack my life council with? It's right. also about like, what role am I playing in other people's lives? Mm-hmm. And does that release me from other roles? Because yeah. here's another big piece about the life council is that we expect best friends, our closest, dearest friends, to have deep conversations with us, bring us soup when we're sick, and be fun, and be obsessed with the same things we're obsessed with. Like, that's what we want in a best mm-hmm. friend. That is so much pressure, and I think is what leads to a lot of friendship strain in adulthood, is because mm-hmm. I cannot bring you soup when you're sick. I'm not a soup bringer. I'm not nurturing as a friend. Mm-hmm. I can be a good listener, or I can maybe be fun or whatever, but once you start to notice your own role on other people's life council, it sort of releases you from having to be all the other roles.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that I really took from the life council in the book, was this freedom in that. And it might be something that people would bristle at, being like, I don't want to be categorized as like this or that type of friend, or to think about it in that sort of formulaic of a way. But it felt in kind of in the same way you said your spouse doesn't need to be your best friend or isn't always your best friend. It's like, even your best friend doesn't need to be all the friends to you all of the time.
And also, you know, our needs shift or what we want shifts. So like, if you have the fun friend, let's say the shallow friend, and shallow is such a negative connotation, but I mean just like someone that you do mostly fun things with. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a dear friend who, like, she does not like deep conversation. And part of me could be like, I mean, I just wish she would go deeper. Like, But instead, the life council concepts let me be like, you know what? I have a lot of friends I can go deep with. It's just not her spot on the council.
Yeah, I think both Roxy and I appreciated that you've been very explicit that you don't think of your spouse as your best friend. And I think that's refreshing, not least because it can feel like, you know, if somebody gets married and thinks of their spouse as their best friend, you can feel a kind of pulling away from friendships and relationships that occurred before. And also, I don't want to wait to have to get married to experience really close, intimate friendship, right?
Yeah.
But why has that been important to you to make a distinction between your friendships and your relationship with your husband? And then what does it look like for you to kind of prioritize relationships outside of your immediate family?
Okay, y'all keep saying it nicer than I actually say it in the book. I'm pretty strong about it. And I say, my husband is not my best friend. Mm-hmm. My sister is not my best friend. I think family relationships are different. They are already mm-hmm. elevated. Mm-hmm. Now, I know the reason that we say that is because we are trying to convey how close we feel to them, how connected we feel to them, that it's like a soul connection. our culture has come to believe that's romantic.
Right.
When that is such a modern view of marriage, that is not what marriage has been historically, is besties. Okay. So there's a lot happening in this current cultural idea of our spouse being our best friend. And I say it really strongly. It's not a diminishment of my husband or of our relationship. He is my husband. He is the most important person in my life. The most important person in my life. He's my first call. I think he's hilarious. He's my husband. I chose to marry him. Yeah. He's not my best friend in that I have other best friends. He doesn't want to hang out with me the same way that my best friends want to hang out with me. Like, I love a good girl night. A girl weekend, a total deep dive with my girlfriends that has no other agenda behind it. We are not juggling sharing a bathroom.
Right.
We are not juggling who made the vet appointment or who took the trash out or whatever. It's not to say that friendships don't have their own complications, but it is a totally different relationship. And I think this happened in my marriage, and I've seen this happen in other marriages. When you put so much pressure on one relationship to be everything, you have to make me laugh. You have to make love to me. You have to make my bathroom clean.
You have to be my spiritual advisor and all make love to me and be hilarious and be rich.
It's too much.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Please be rich. It is way too much pressure. And in my life, what happened was Jeff, my husband, we were friends first. Mm-hmm. And so we were kind of best friends, like boy, girl, best friends before anything romantic happened, which is what made it sort of complicated because I did sort of feel in some sense that I was marrying my best friend. But then once we were married and I was in my lonely stage in Los Angeles, lonely meaning I didn't have hardly any girlfriends here. And so I was trying to put all of those friendship expectations, like, let's go to brunch, let's go shopping, like, let's, we do all the things together. And he was just like, that is just not how we connect. That is not our vibe. But I didn't get it because I was like, marriages are supposed to be everything. And it was compounded by this fact that I was lonely. Had I not had the loneliness piece, maybe I would have thought about this differently. But I do think that a lot of women fall into this romantic trap of my husband is my best friend just because he's the first person I tell everything to or whatever. And I really want women to hear that you need to have deep and meaningful relationships outside of your marriage. You have to have friends who are not in a contract with you, spiritual or otherwise, that can reflect back to you if things feel unhealthy. It's not all negative. They're also just fulfilling different needs. It's just fun to be with girlfriends and things, and it's healthy to have lots of other relationships. But a lot of times, if you are distancing from all other friendships, they can't see that things have gotten hard in your life, and you feel like you're not allowed to talk about it with anyone. And I don't just mean that your marriage is hard. You might be having struggles financially. You might have struggles with your kids.
Right.
But you feel like you can't tell anyone that. And so then they can't either help you, love on you, give you a distraction, or reflect back that possibly other steps need to be taken here.
It's interesting. I was listening to another podcast recently, and she was talking about how, like, the reality is that most women will end up single again at some point in their life. Like, even if they got married, the stats are just that way. And it's not even just divorce. It's just that women often outlive their husbands. And, you know, I'm watching my mom go through this right now. And I am so, so glad my mom has so many good friends and that that's been a huge part of her life for as long as I've known her. But now it's like just watching that, like, when she needs that support, she has it. That's not to diminish the relationship she had with my dad, but I'm just very grateful that, like, she's not alone now.
Yes. You know, there's a lot of talk about, like, pouring into your marriage so that once your kids are grown, you don't just look at each other like you're strangers or something.
Fair.
There's so much out there about how you're supposed to nurture your dad come marriage all the time, which I'm for, and I understand the need for that. There is not enough out there about how we need to be nurturing our friendships. That is a primary relationship in our life.
We take them for granted. We just assume, I think, well, friends will always be around. I'll always mm-hmm. have friends. My friends know I love them. Like, there's a lot of the friendship waters that are just assumed, and we don't have the same instruction as we have in parenthood, career, marriage, mm-hmm. all these other ways that we are taught to take care of these relationships. And we're just not taught how to take care of friendships.
Yeah, I think that's totally right. What are some really practical ways to invest in friendships and make sure that they have the care and the sustainability that we want to see?
Okay, so I write really specifically in the book about my 5 friendship philosophies. I'm not going to do all 5 right now, although one of them we've already touched on. My husband is not my best friend. I'm going to focus on 2 that I think are really important that anybody can do. One is believe the best, and the other is just go. Mm-hmm. So I'll start with believe the best. I think a lot of friendship angst comes from, we make up these stories in our head about, like, well, she meant to hurt my feelings. She definitely meant to not invite me to the thing. Mm-hmm. We make a lot of assumptions out of our own insecurities or maybe out of our own past experience. And we just decide that that's what's happening. And if we started from a place of believing the best with our friends, I think we're assuming better things for them, even when we have to have hard conversations, even when they do hurt our feelings or leave us out. Mm-hmm. And we have to say, hey, like, when you said that, it sort of bummed me out. You're not starting from a place of, I know that you were trying to make a jab. Instead, you're starting from this place of, I don't think that you would have ever guessed how much that would have hurt my feelings, but it did. And so we have to have this hard conversation. When we're starting from a place of believing the best, those conversations are going to go better. And we do this because, first of all, I think we do this because this is mostly true. Most of us are doing our best. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing. But then also we do this because we need them to believe the best about us. Mm-hmm. Because we are also going to mess up. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, the other one, just go. People default to no. And I think we need to default to yes. When I was growing up, like, you just went to people's stuff. Like, if they invited you to things, you went. And you know what? That's like what community is. Do I want to go to my friend's little girl's dance recital? I do not. I do not. I am bored to tears by that. Mm-hmm. I'm not. This is 3 hours of little kids dancing. I am going to stab my eyes out. Oh, well. She's my best friend. Mm. I'm showing up. This is what community is. I want her to come to my thing that she doesn't want to come to. She doesn't want to come to my birthday dinner that starts at 9. But she's going to, because mm-hmm. the default needs to become just go. And we are often so glad we went.
Yeah. And I can really clearly point to some moments with friends in New York that, because I went to that thing, our friendship is better, especially some of the newer friendships where it's like mm-hmm. showing up 3 or 4 times in a row is like what cemented that friendship. And it would have been so easy not to. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we've been hearing a lot about is just how loneliness as an epidemic, you know, like the Surgeon General is literally calling it that. And I think the data shows that it's men in particular that are very bad at this. Like, an increasing number of men don't even have like 1 really close friend. So I am kind of curious if you think there's anything men can learn from women about friendship, because I do think we do it better.
I do think we do it better. I think we have different needs than they do, though, also. You know, this is anecdotally from my own observation. I haven't studied this, but I mean, I know what you're talking about. I think that men could learn from women the value of just the time spent. It's pretty rare, but I love it when my husband just watches football all day with a friend. Like, they're mm-hmm. just, they can chat, they can have some food. Doesn't have to be productive. That men would just be like, why would I spend hours with somebody just like together?
Right. Yeah.
And they could learn from that. Women do that excellently. We love to just spend time together. And I think men would get more out of that than they even know. Proximity and time deepens a bond whether you like it or not. We started this conversation with, like, when we're young, that's how we make right. friends and keep friends.
Right.
That's not what adult life looks like, but it can in its own version of it. For example, you spent every single Sunday of football season watching it with the same group of guys,
right.
just watching football every single Sunday. You are going to come out of that 4-month time period in a totally different place, friendship-wise. And you've done nothing but, like, watch football. Mm-hmm. because proximity and time builds bonds. Bonds is what helps us sort of show up for one another when we're needed. It's also fun. Can I just keep mentioning that? Yeah. That a lot of times we talk about these relationships like from their deepest level. And I want to be like, but also fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the nice things about friendship, especially because you're not like taking out the trash together and cooking meals and mm-hmm. doing all of like life stuff. Like it can be a break and fun.
Yeah. Friendship like sort of nets fun. Whereas like other relationships, fun might not be the primary mm-hmm. thing in any other relationship, but for friendship, most of the time, that was fun.
Thank you for a very fun conversation. I'm sure our listeners will also find it fun.
It really is an important topic.
I love chatting with y'all.
I don't see us building an intentional Christian community anytime soon, even though if somebody wants to fund our brownstone mm-hmm. idea, listeners, you know where to reach us. But I do feel like we need something more structured or ritualistic or just something that helps everybody reprioritize friendship mm-hmm. to make sure it doesn't get demoted on this list of relationships that are considered important.
I'm trying to think if I have any ideas besides living together. Well, what makes you feel most seen and loved and cared for by your friends? Like when you think about like, when do you feel like solidified in a relationship?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of my closest friends don't live in New York. They're spread out across the country. I've always been touched by friends who are willing to travel to see each other. I feel like that can go a really long way in re-solidifying something. And of course, it's like we picked up where we left off. Like there's something about getting on a plane, getting in a car to see a friend is a big deal. Honestly, I don't know if they've said like, I'm in it for life, let's seal the deal, mm-hmm. but have said, I'm not going anywhere. Like I consider this like a primary relationship in my whole life. Maybe we just need friendship bracelets. Like maybe if that feels too intimate and vulnerable, friendship bracelets.
Tattoos, Caitlin. That's forever.
We hope.
Should we get Saved by the City tattoos?
With our producer Jonathan's face, like on our lower back.
The little halo over the top.
He's like writing this idea down right now. Actually, temporary Saved by the City tattoos could be cool.
Ooh, swag.
What has made you feel loved, seen, supported in your friendships?
Yeah, I think same. People traveling to see me has meant a lot. I think just showing up when it's been hard. I've had a lot of friends do that over the years in different instances that were really hard for me. And those were moments that could have made me feel really alone in the world without a spouse, you know, without like a partner mm-hmm. or having family far away. Like, and I didn't. I felt well loved and well supported. I definitely think that it can be easy to think you don't have anything to offer people when something bad happens to them mm-hmm. other than just like a quick text or something. But most of the time, any kind of reaching out really made a difference. Mm-hmm. But also there are really practical needs that people have. And I feel like I've had people meet those, whether that was like, you know, offering some money to help out or mm-hmm. showing up with food or helping like schedule doctor's appointments or whatever. Like those things actually really help when people are struggling. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, I just like spending time with my friends. So I think it's just when people make time for each other, it's just fun.
Yeah. Let's not forget the fun part of friendship. It's supposed to be fun.
Exactly.
And boy, have we had some fun. But those stories are for another time.
Stay tuned. Saved by the City is a Religion News Service production. The producer is Jay Woodward and the consulting editor is Paul O'Donnell. We get production assistance from Julia Windham.
Chaz Russo put together our look and Martin Fowler wrote our theme music.
We are Roxy Stone.
And Caitlin Beatty.
Thanks for listening.
Good friends let their friends make decisions, decisions that turn out to be not so great in hindsight.
Yeah. That's happened for me for a few friends. So.
Who? Like, do you want to name him?
Well, I can't remember his name, so.
Yep, but I know who you're talking about. His name rhymes with